What is the latest on this up and down market? Plus, we interview Ed Klissold of Ned Davis Research.
This is Jerry Toome of Smart Money, a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services with Cornerstone President and Founder, Jerry Toome. Jerry Toome is a certified financial planner. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member, FINRA, and SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Toome's Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. We are here to talk about your finances, investments, and the economy, and we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.
Welcome to Smart Money. This is Michael Williams. All right, Jerry, man, this market, it just can't make up its mind. It's very news sensitive.
Yep.
You know, the past couple of years we've been very Fed sensitive. Now we're very news sensitive. What do you think's going on right now?
It's just a crazy world right now. We want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the international stuff, because vast majority of countries out there that are going to end up settling a deal with Washington, I think, last I heard, there were 70 countries that are ready to do a deal now, and that's great. So Trump will get a lot of what he's wanting, but I think there's bigger fish to fry, so to speak, when he starts talking to China and probably the EU. And I'm reminded of, you know, every year at Christmas time we used to watch The Wizard of Oz, and they had, when they finally got to Oz, there was a horse of a different color there. I think it's going to be a horse of a different color with the EU, but China in particular. And China is not going to back off, I don't think. And they've got an ace card. And we're going to talk about what is the ace card that China has right now, because they have not only the United States, but they have the entire world over a barrel, so to speak, on one area of stuff that affects a lot of things that are manufactured, automobiles, windmills, you name it. They hold the Trump card. I hate to be irony on that one, but that's true. So bottom line is, the market is just, I think, and I would encourage people to go back and reread if you haven't read it, or read it, our newsletter that I called Election Blues back in September 6th of last year. And when I'm going to hit just a few highlights on this, because what I wanted to do last week after we finished the radio show, I went back and I went, you know, it turned out, and from what I can see now in hindsight, that this, in my view, it is turning out to be very accurate with what's actually happened. Now, there were some things we certainly didn't anticipate. I didn't anticipate Trump. I thought Trump was going to win. I didn't anticipate the vigor with which he's going to win, because he dominated the election. And I didn't anticipate he would do trade war immediately right off the bat,
right,
when he took off. In hindsight, I can see now, looking back about it, and I'm talking about just since the trade war has gone crazy, gone viral, it makes sense from this perspective. It makes sense that, okay, Trump's got a very narrow, you know, margin in the House and the Senate that are people willing to side with him. If the economy goes south in a big way right now, some of those are going to defect. Some of the Republicans will defect and vote with the Democrats, and he's going to lose the House and the Senate. Then he's a true lame duck, and then the potential impeachment and all that other stuff, that's crazy. So I'm guessing if he is not just reacting and actually strategically thinking this out, and him and his team, he's saying we got to get the bad stuff out of the way this year so that we win the midterms, or don't lose too much in the midterms next year at the end of 26.
Right, because they'd rather be, at a minimum, have a recovery going into those elections.
Right, recovery of the market and the economy. And I think that's doable. I do, but I also think that we're in a definite bear market. So Wall Street's rule typically is 20% is a bear market. NASDAQ has already gone through that level. S&P has not. So I think this is going to be a bear. The question is, matter of fact, my view of the world, and you don't have to believe me, and I mean, I'm not always right, but my view of the world right now is it's 100% that we're going to have a recession of some sort, and we're already in a bear market. Now, the question is going to be the magnitude. Now, again, we're not always right. Nobody's always right. There's no gurus that are 100% with a crystal ball kind of thing. That doesn't exist. But I'm looking back now just to see with hindsight, and I would encourage you to check me out on this. Check me out and say, okay, well, let's see how I accurate it was. September 6, 2024, called Election Blues. Now, there clearly are a few things that didn't turn out exactly the way I thought in terms of the timing in particular. But let me just read you a couple of quotes from this, and I would encourage you to go to our website, cornerstonereport.com. Then we're going to talk about the fact that small businesses, according to the transcript and the guys up at Hamilton Point, small businesses, one-third of U.S. imports. So the issue is these are companies that do not have it's one-third of all the imports. They don't have the critical infrastructure, the massive staffs. They can't do what the Fortune 500 companies can do. And I've heard stories over and over. We don't have time on this show, but over and over again about, again, supply chain madness. We got this part from this part of the world, and okay, we got 15 component parts that we finally put together when it gets here, and you know, half of them are somewhere we can't get to, and the tariffs make it uncertain, and we're not going to build factories with this kind of uncertainty. So the uncertainty is what has really unsettled the stock market. The tariffs, I think, will be punitive in some areas, and they'll make trade very difficult to do. They're typically on tariffs, there's typically a spike of inflation in the beginning of them. And then if they do what they normally do, then you have a deflationary impact on the other side of the deal.
We have a very good interview coming up next week with Dave Abramson of Alpine Macro addressing that issue.
One of the best interviews I think we've ever done on Smart Money. So he's excellent. He's just gotten back from his tour of Europe telling everybody in Europe what the facts are and what's going on. So I'm glad you reminded me of that. But anyway, small businesses make up a third of U.S. imports. If you got 50 employees or 20 employees or 100 employees, how do you make this? How do you fix this? And the people are just pulling their hair out going, this is insane. I can't, you know, it's taken me 20 or 30 years to build this infrastructure. I can't change it in 1 month or 2 months, and we're going to run out of inventory. So in the short run, this is normally an inflationary impact to prices in America and the rest of the world, frankly. But in the long run, it usually causes a slowdown in the economy and or recession. This is a shock to the system. This reminds me of back in the old days, if you saw One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Jack Nicholson. He went into an insane asylum, and they did shock treatments back then. Now, nowadays, probably psychologists in America or psychiatrists would think this is so primitive. It's like, you know, bleeding people, you know, back in the Middle Ages.
With the leeches, yeah.
Yeah, with the leeches. It's like, okay, shock therapy was something they thought was the latest and greatest technology, and it turned out to be horrific, and it ruined people for life. I had a cousin that was that way. She had a problem with depression, which was not that serious. She went through shock treatments, and she was then never the same person. So the latest technology didn't work with her. Anyway, so not to go too far afield, people in the small businesses are going to have a real trouble. As we've mentioned, and you looked this up before we went on the air, U.S. Chamber of Commerce reports that 46% of GDP is small businesses. 44% of GDP, according to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, is small businesses. 46% of employment, according to the SBA, is small businesses. So you got almost half of the economy in small businesses that do not have the wherewithal to try to fix this. Now, not all small businesses will be affected. As a matter of fact, I've recently gone through some stuff from Alpine Macro. Guess what, folks? Their target in terms of all of the various industries in the U.S. that will have the least impact on the tariffs is the real estate market. That's why, because they're not putting things together from all over the world. So it'll have an impact if the economy goes into recession on certain sectors of the real estate market, but I still think the real estate market looks great for the long run because I think inflation will get worse. So in the short term, when we're dealing with trade, the first impact will be inflationary because they're going to all have to raise their prices to accommodate to pay the tariffs, number one. Number two, and most of these companies cannot absorb that. They can't go, I'll just take it out of the bottom line. I'll take it off the profits. Well, that's not a – then your profits are crashing. If your profits crash, then the stock market doesn't like that, and it crashes. So I think we're headed to what looks right now like a mild recession, and I'm guessing it could end up being a mama bear or a daddy bear. We'll come back to that in just a moment, what level of bear it is. But let me read you some quotes from the election blues. So I showed a chart on page one. It said, historically speaking, once unemployment rate reaches a certain level, it has becomes self-reinforcing. Now, it kind of faked us out last year because it went up to that level and then it backed off. Right. And then Trump won and we had the euphoria from the Trump election. Now it's moving back up again and there's a distinctive. The Alpine Macro guys said there's been a huge shift in sentiment and everything else in April. So in March, the employment looked good. The market looked good for up till a while. Then all of a sudden, this is a shock. And that's what you never know is what that shock's going to be. Now, historically, again, based on what the Fed has done, and we talked about this before the show, the Fed has a mandate to keep prices stable, not let inflation get out of Pandora's box, get out of the box, and also to keep the employment up, not let the employment rate get out of whack. Both of those are lagging indicators. So they, historically speaking, they're humans. They will tend to wait too long to adjust for that. They raise rates until usually they're too high. And then the bond market's the only way you can usually tell they're too high, and that usually is the two-year treasury. When it starts tanking, the Fed's too high. That's usually almost certain what happens. Nothing is a guarantee. So the bottom line is when I look at the chart on page 4 that talks about the U.S. Fed funds rate, you can see the recessions going back to the 90s. And in each case, there was a lag time. Again, Professor Richard Wilson, who was a Milton Friedman disciple in the 1977-ish or 79, sometime in that frame, when I was studying as an undergraduate, he didn't lecture, he ranted and raved. They called him Wild Man Wilson.
That's what I was about to ask you. I remember he had an unusual nickname.
He had a nickname, Wild Man Wilson. And I don't know if he drank too much at night or whatever, but I mean, he was a wild man in the studio. He was on a mission. He was like, this is the mission. We have to defeat the Keynesians and we'll kill them. Not exactly physically, but, you know, he ranted and raved. You never got bored. No one ever went to sleep in his class.
No one ever claimed I ranted and raved during my math lectures.
No.
Kind of
unusual.
Kind of hard to get that excited about math.
So if you go back to the most recent recessions, one in December of 2000, once the Fed started cutting rates, they started cutting interest rates in January 2001. So by then, they're like, okay, inflation's under control enough, we can start to lower rates. But there's a significant lag time before it really affects the economy. In this case, it was only 3 months later that a recession hit. So by the time the Fed picks up that there's weakness going on, they start lowering rates, in essence, it's kind of too late to forestall a recession.
Right.
And there's no guarantees on any of this, but this is history. The Fed funds rate in August of 2007, recession began 4 months later. So the Fed, in my opinion, has raised rates too long again, kept them too high, and it's the way it's going to go. Let me read you a couple other quick quotes from the newsletter.
I think we also know Trump's opinion on that.
He's been
a little vocal on that.
He's going to try to get rid of Powell. I don't know that he's going to be successful. I have a feeling the Supreme Court will say, hands off. No, you may not do that. That's probably what's getting ready to happen. Okay, what about page 7, stocks, under the newsletter Election Blues? Are they priced to perfection? And I'm not going to go into all the detail for lack of time today because we got a really good interview coming up in the second half. But the price-to-book value ratio, price-to-sales ratio, Shiller PE, etc., those were at some of the highest readings in U.S. history. And one of the things I pointed out is historically, on page 6, we show the margin debt. Margin debt, here's your sign, folks. Listen to this. Margin debt normally peaks near the top of the market. Then when the market starts to go down, you have built-in selling pressure. Why? Because everybody that's margined, if you have $100,000 in the market and $50,000 borrowed, you lose money twice as fast. So a 20% correction of the market, which is kind of doable for most people if they're doing cash accounts or 401ks or whatever, okay. Well, the market's down 20%, I'm worried. But if you're margined 50%, your account's down 40%. And you normally get a margin call before you get to that point.
Yes.
So then you have to send more money in, and there's gigantic contraction in the market. And I think we've just started that, but I don't think we've gotten anywhere near the capitulation point. Recessions, again, this is on page 8. When you have recessions, earnings go down. I think that we're going to have a rough time with the earnings in this quarter announcement. And it's not going to be a rough time on what the earnings are for the first quarter. It's going to be a rough time for the companies as they start to announce their outlook for the rest of the year. Because if they're I mean, to me, if your outlook is really sterling for the rest of the year when what we're going through right now, you know, I'd make the case you may have a screw loose. I mean, it's just not even remotely possible to me. So bottom line is, we talked about the Fed policy affects the economy and the market, but widely variable lag times. And the vast majority, again, this is something we said in September, September 6th, this is the conclusion of it, on page 10, it said, the bulk of Wall Street and most investors have been drinking the soft landing Kool-Aid. I hope there's not a hint of poison in the brew. So I don't want to crow. I don't want to brag. Bragging is not a godly factor as far as I'm concerned, or trait, if you want to say that. At the same time, we want you to know, when we're right, we're going to tell you we're right. When we're wrong, we'll tell you we're wrong. I thought I was wrong for a while,
frankly. Yeah, I was going to say, even after Trump won, we had to go back and go, well, have things changed enough where we got to change our opinion? And we did back off a little bit to be, okay, maybe it's more that soft landing has a better chance now.
Right.
But that was before the tariff shock.
I know. And the tariff shock is just extraordinary. And it's going to affect things. So I think if Trump's thinking this through, which surely he is, him and his staff, him and his cabinet, they're going, okay, we're going to get the rough medicine out of the way in the first year of my term so we can have, you know, everything coming like roses in the second year of my term. And I hope he's right. I hope we're not playing the game of chicken to see which car is going to pass what, or, you know, whoa, I hope the timing works.
That seems like the other party claims he doesn't think. But I don't think that's right. I think he just, he enjoys a little chaos.
He does.
He enjoys not being completely up front with you because he's trying to negotiate in the background.
Yeah.
And so they take that as not thinking, and that's not what I've seen.
But I think he does have a lot of stuff that he runs with whatever his gut says.
And sometimes that gets him in trouble.
Instinctive. Yes, it could. So,
well, before we forget, we still got a few minutes before we get to our interview with Ed Clissold of Ned Davis Research. Very good interview. But you mentioned at the beginning, so I want us to make sure we don't forget.
Right.
You said China has a Trump card on the rest of the world.
They do, and not just on the U.S. So, in my view, you know, maybe Trump, here's what we have to hope or pray or whatever you want to do. We hope that Trump and Xi Jinping can somehow reach some sort of an agreement that is amiable, acceptable to both sides. If we don't, we got pandemonium, because that means, in a worst case scenario, which is right now the way it looks, that was based on the current tariffs, China and U.S. don't trade at all anymore, ever again. And that's just, that can't happen, I don't think. I do agree with him in terms of the geopolitical, that China is a major risk, because they have stated that they intend to try to take Taiwan at some point. So that's a different matter, and that's not a today thing as far as I'm concerned. The CIA reported that Xi Jinping told his military to be ready to invade Taiwan in 2027.
Because it's a big anniversary for them.
Yep, and that's a good point. And it's not, but that's not yet. But that also doesn't mean they're going to do it in 2027.
Right.
They might do it later, because China has an interest in building rapport with other countries of the world, because they want to build their One Belt, One Road. And if you're not familiar with that, they're going to have land highways built across the land, across the Himalayas, even parts, you know, north of the Himalayas, going all the way and through India and going all the way into Europe. Highway transportation systems, which is basically probably going to be a two-lane asphalt highway.
Right.
But those don't exist right now. And the One Belt, One Road, the belt is actually the land part, the highway. For some reason in Chinese language, I don't understand this exactly, but the road is actually on the sea. So they're connecting the ports along the way, going from Shanghai all the way to Spain. So that's their 30-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
So would they want to wreck that plan by creating havoc? Well, I don't know. If push comes to shove, will they do something military? I think they will. But I think that hopefully is not this decade. That's my best hope.
All right. So what is this Trump card?
Before we run out of time, I'm reading a special report from Alpine Macro. And by the way, David Abramson of Alpine Macro will be our guest next week. One of the best interviews I've ever done, I think, next week. He talks about this and a whole lot of other stuff. We'll leave that surprise for next week. So one of the things they said, certain export restrictions could have substantial repercussions for the United States high-tech sector, and defense sectors. Is high tech important to the U.S. economy?
A little bit.
I would say so. And it's what we call critical minerals. They have a virtual monopoly on certain critical minerals that are necessary. And so they said, notably, supplies approximately 90% of the world's permanent magnets. Gallium, magnesium, tungsten, bismuth, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right, graphite, tellurium, and there's about five or six others. And in some cases, like in the gallium, they produce almost 100% of the world's supply of that, almost 100%. Magnesium, it's 97% roughly, looking at the chart. Tungsten, it's about 87% of the world's supply, and so forth. Graphite is about 77% of the world's graphite supply. So again, they pointed out 90% of the world's magnets are made from processed rare earth metals and serve as critical components for A, wind turbines, B, electric vehicles, and numerous other advanced technologies. How did China build its dominance in critical minerals? There's about 12 minerals here that they're not only dominant, but almost a corner on the market. Virtual monopolies in some areas. I remember John D. Rockefeller once said competition is a sin, you know, because he was a robber baron and he wanted to put a railroad out of business. He'd lower the price and lower the price and lower the price, and they'd try to stay with him, and they'd finally reach a point where they couldn't stay in business anymore, and he'd buy them out for pennies on the dollar, and he owned the whole line at that point. So that's kind of what's going on here. So how did China build its dominance in critical minerals? The answer lies in decades. China thinks long term. Decades of, we think, election cycle.
Right.
We think nightly news.
Yep.
We think, you got to get on the phone. You got to look at Facebook right now. No. Everything in this society is built on super, super, super short-term results, which has some bad components to that kind of thinking. Anyway, the answer lies in decades of strategic planning, economic maneuvering, state-backed industrial policies, and considerable technology investments. Approach has granted China distinct advantages, positioning as the leader of global supply chains. And when I look at the level, I mean, China's producing about 280,000 tons of rare earth production right now. The United States is about 40,000 tons. So when you add them all together, China is, what would the math be, math professor there? That would be about, what, between six and seven times more minerals. So in short, the critical minerals they hold create greater strategic value than economic value for China. What do they mean by that? Militarily and or just trade. In other words, economic value is probably not going to put all the bread on the table in China. It's not that big of an industry to, you know, they can't take everybody, the 15 million people a year they used to bring to the cities to work in these industries. But it gives them a strategic advantage. The country's success in dominating critical mineral supply chains is a result of a unique approach that is challenging other countries to replicate. And I would say essentially that other countries essentially cannot replicate. So their production of this is going through the roof. The rest of the world is way, way behind. Now, tell me that this is something that Trump can get them to negotiate away. President Trump, not trying to be disrespectful here, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, this is, they, when they corner the market on special minerals like this, critical minerals, Trump's over a barrel. What are you going to do with this? We can't just fire up the engines and the furnaces and all of a sudden mining and all. If we do these same things, we're not having near slave labor rates like China does. We got to pay five, six times more with our current labor rates and our current costs than they do. So theoretically, I'm not saying they're going to do this, theoretically they could pull the plug on this whole thing. And all of those types of production, of all those types of things that are necessary to create a functioning U.S. world industrial economy that's modern, this comes to a screeching halt. Okay, well, is that a risk that the market has really gotten involved with to this point? Probably not. This is kind of under the cover. It's not something that's getting I haven't seen any reports on it, nightly news. Good thing about having a special research firm like Alpine Macro. And again, David Abramson will be our guest next week, one of the best radio interviews I've ever done. He's a phenomenal speaker. He just got back from a tour of Europe explaining what all is going on to the Europeans, European banks, and European leaders over there economically. So anyhow, this is something else, but we're running out of time for this half of the show. I want to also introduce our next guest, which is Ed Klissold. He is a chartered financial analyst. That's the buy and hold type of thinking, but he doesn't do that anymore. He comes from that viewpoint, but he's working with a whole bunch of chartered market technicians, similar to David McCord, our president, who's the chartered market technician here. And so it's called the U.S. Equity Strategy that he runs, part of Ned Davis. If you don't know who Ned Davis is, read the new newsletter that just hit our website, which is called Bear Market Starting? Which turned out to be, by God's grace again, I give him the glory when I'm right. I take the blame when I'm wrong. Bottom line is it's proven to be pretty accurate as well. So go on our website, cornerstonereport.com.
All right, well, before we get to our interview with Ed Klissold of Ned Davis Research, I wanted to remind you how you can learn more about Cornerstone Financial Services and Jerry Tuma and myself. Please go to cornerstonereport.com. That's cornerstonereport.com. You can learn about our team there. You can get Jerry's latest special reports, both the ones he mentioned. Right, the latest one being Bear Market Starting would be at the top of that page whenever you click on the tab. If you scroll down a little bit, you can see the previous one from September that he was referring to, which is Election Blues. So again, just go to cornerstonereport.com to see those newsletters he was referencing. You can also listen to a previous week's broadcast and interviews. Just click on the Smart Money Radio tab to find previous broadcasts and interviews. For a free consultation, please call us at 1-800-327-4285. That's 1-800-327-4285. That would just give us a chance to talk to each other to see if you're a good fit for Cornerstone Financial and if we're a good fit for you. So again, you can just call us at 1-800-327-4285. In addition to finding our shows on our website, we are also podcast through Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Audible. Just search for Jerry Tuma's Smart Money. Let's just search for Jerry Tuma's Smart Money if you'd like to see us in podcast version. All right, so now we're going to go to an interview that Jerry did a couple days ago with Ed Klissold of Ned Davis Research. So let's go to that interview now.
And we're going to an interview now with Ed Klissold, who is one of the senior stock analysts for Ned Davis Research. And by the way, if you want to get information about their services, NDR, Ned Davis Resources, NDR is what it's all about, .com. And I just want to explain a little bit before we have this interview about how we've looked at these guys. His book has been remodeled, it's been updated, but it's called Being Right. I'm talking about Ned Davis Sr., Ned Davis rather, not Ed. Being Right or Making Money. And if you read the thesis of his book, it's really good. These guys are right on the same page as us. They are tactical, so they don't do long-term buy and hold. They will wait till they get a confirmation from their indicators. But as Ed will tell you in just a moment, they're considering that we're probably going to have a recessionary bear, which are worse than the temporary bear. So again, you have non-recessionary bears. Maybe you have a 20% decline. If that's where we're at, then that's, you know, we might be done with this one. I just don't think so. I think we're probably almost certainly headed to a recession in the second half of the year. And who knows what's going to happen with the trade war? Who knows what's going to happen with Iran and their nuclear program? And does Israel try to take them out this year? Does the U.S. back Israel? There's so many risks out there. I think this is going to be a more pronounced and a longer bear. So he'll give you the definition of those. He'll also tell you what the magnitude of those typically are, whether it's a recession bear, and it even could be a secular bear. So let me give you our definition to help cement how this works in our mind, our views. Number one, Goldilocks and the three bear. First, you have baby bear. Baby bear, in our mind, is a correction in an ongoing bull market. So you're going from 2009 to 2020 or something like that. And one of those, for example, was 2018. the tariff thing came up. The Fed was cutting was tight money and so forth, and so you had a short-term bear market, almost bear, and we're still there now on this one. So you have your baby bears correction, but it's an ongoing bull market. So the tide is coming in, and it's a way you have waves along the way, but it's still the tide's coming in. In a recessionary bear, usually you have a much bigger drop. And again, he'll quantify that in a moment. Typically, those bears, 30-35%. But if it's what's called a secular bear, so your cyclical bears are like the mama bear in Goldilocks and three bears. 30-35% is typical. If it is a secular bear, and we just don't know that yet, and we'll describe what those are like in a moment with the interview here. A secular bear is usually one that lasts a lot longer, as much deeper. We had one of those in 2000. We had one of those in 1974. We had one of those in 2008. Those secular bears, you can be up to 50% down. Now, if you're retired, if you're not retired and you want to ride it out or dollar cost average through those, that's your prerogative. If you're retired, though, that puts you way behind the curve. And if you're living on any of your money, that can become self-destructive. So we are focusing primarily on people that are retired in our client base, in our business. And so for that reason, we think, you know, avoiding the daddy bears at all costs is very, very important. So if you want to look at their newsletters and their information, again, go to NDR, like Ned Davis Research, .com. Let's go to the interview with Ed Crisold. Well, Ed, thanks for being with us on Smart Money. You're one of the primary stock analysts for Ned Davis. And by the way, I love Ned's book, Being Right or Making Money. What a title. And that's kind of, okay, are you right about your opinion? Are you working, making money? And I know there's a backstory to that. Do you care to comment on the book or the philosophy that Ned Davis started this firm? I know you're one of the stock analysts. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, so my personal experience with NDR is I was a client when I started in the business. This was in the late 90s. And, you know, your screen was green every day and everybody seemed like a genius. And there was this person out there saying, this isn't how it normally goes. However, my trend indicators are keeping me in the market, but we need to be ready. And so when the trend turned in 2000, Ned was one of the first to get out. Meanwhile, everybody else was still talking about new paradigms. And that was a great lesson to me of the NDR approach and NDR philosophy. And yeah, so we talk a lot about what we think might happen, but at the end of the day, it's about our indicators and what they're saying. And so, again, being right or making money.
Yeah. So, again, I know it. From his experience, he grew up in the 70s, and he said he was usually right about the macro, but he didn't get his timing right, so that's how this whole company got started. Now, I know your systems, because you have a lot of different systems, and we read about six or seven of your newsletters. So I know they work a little different. Each one has – a lot of you guys have different separate models that you run. But I want to say, first of all, I've been impressed as I've gotten to know how you run your models over the last several months, really a little over a year. I'm impressed at how accurate things are. And I know you're not a buy and hold shop. My view of the world is that we've started a significant bear market. But I know that many of your models have not yet confirmed that, and you're waiting on confirmation. So what are your views, first of all? Are we in a bear market, do you think? And you don't have to, you know, you don't absolutely have to give me a guess on that or educated guess, but I'd like one anyway. If we're starting a major bear market, what will it take to confirm that? How will we know this is not just a correction in an ongoing bull market versus the other thing would be if we're starting a bear or a major bear possibly, what are you looking for?
Sure. I think at this point, the real question is whether or not the economy is going to fall into a recession.
Okay.
So about half of all bear markets have recessions. Half of them don't. Now, these are what we call these cyclical bear markets, and we talk about different time frames. So cyclical bear markets can last anywhere from about 6 months to a few years. And the non-recession bears, which kind of makes sense, tend to be shorter and less severe, 20-25% decline on average. It lasts about 7 months. And so if we don't get a recession, it's quite possible there could be some backing and filling and maybe, you know, a retest and a scare of the market over the next several months, and that would probably be about it. Whereas if we're going into a recession, then there's probably another down leg to this whole bear market. The average recessionary bear market is about a 35% decline over about a year and a half. So this would represent just the first leg down in a major bear market. So that's what we're really keyed in on at the moment.
Okay, that's good insight and good information. And I'm kind of throw you a little bit of curveball here because I'm not this one's not in the prep material I sent you, but we always talk about if it is a more severe bear, you know, we talk about mama bears and so forth. Typically, a lot of the times what you'll see is kind of three stages emotionally. You'll have the denial phase. So I would agree with you that we can't tell yet if this is going to be a non-recession bear or recession bear. That's yet to be determined. If it ends up being a recession bear, my experience has been there's kind of three phases. There's a denial phase where everybody says it's not a bear. Then a recognition phase where people are usually like, and again, I'm not talking about institutional people. I'm talking about retail type clients, investors that are, you know, retail clients. So you tend to go through the deer in the headlights, I don't know what to do, and then you have the capitulation or panic phase of that. Do you have any thoughts on that? It looks like we may be, I would at this point bet, and of course I know you're going to be driven by the data. You're like David McCord, he's our chartered market technician, president of our company. You're going to be driven by the data. But if we do go through that, if we are talking about a recession bear, and I'm concerned about what's going to happen with Iran and Israel also this year, and more importantly, Trump, whether he's going to get involved or not. This could be what we refer to as a grizzly bear. It could be a mama bear. It looks to me like it's a bear one way or another, not just a correction in an up market. So what are your thoughts on, I threw you a whole lot of stuff all at once, but what are your thoughts on some of this?
Yeah, well, I guess I never really answered your last question. So to be fair, while we follow the data, that's what we do. Mm-hmm. But my working assumption is that this is a bear market, and there's a pretty decent chance it turns into a recession.
Okay.
A recession bear. But in terms of your take on sentiment, that is exactly correct. And where are we right now? Well, we've seen, you know, some signs of people getting nervous. Clearly, you know, after Liberation Day, when you had, you know, a 10% decline in the S&P over 2 days, it's only happened three other times since World War II. That was 1987, 2008 financial crisis, and in 2020 during the pandemic, initial decline. So that puts us in rare territory. But if you look at some other signs of investor activity, it hasn't gotten to the, you know, let's just get out of the market at any price,
right,
type of situation. For example, we look at inflows into domestic equity ETFs, mm-hmm, and they are still running positive. You look at the last 4 week average, and that's not what happens at the bottom of a bear market. Normally, it's just say, hey, I can't take the pain anymore. Let me get out. And I think the sentiment, this is a little more qualitative from talking to people, that because it was so fast, mm-hmm, and a lot of people didn't have, if you're a day trader, or if you're an institution, you're a hedge fund, you're paid to be in the market every day. Yeah, you were looking at this. But if not, you look at your portfolio, every month or so, or every quarter, you haven't had time to really react. And so that's that phase hasn't gotten there. And so if we go into recession, that's the sentiment shoe that needs to drop.
All right. So your view is most likely you think this is probably a recessionary bear, which we know is a lot deeper. Taking that a step further, our clients, our listeners, we've tried to get them, and our clients, to understand the difference in a cyclical bear versus a secular bear. And I could make the case either way right now. I know Ned, in his most recent newsletter, he's talking about this could be the beginning of a secular bear. Do you have an opinion on that? Is this, and again, you don't have to have an opinion because I know you're data driven, but if this had the earmarks in your mind, let's assume that we do have a recession, which I think is going to happen later this year. If we do have a recession and it becomes a recessionary bear, those again are the bigger ones. It could be a mama bear, which again is, we in our vernacular, way we use it is, a correction in a bull market's 10 or 15%. A mama bear is usually 20 to 30-ish%, and a secular bear like you had in 2008, like you had in 2000, those are more like 50% type bears. Would you have an opinion on which one of those we're likely to see if this turns out, if we do have a recession?
Yeah, so the way I'd answer that is, we think of there was secular bull market started in 2009 at the end of that last major decline.
Right.
And these secular bulls, they can last, 18 to 24 years. If you look at the last few, the one that was from 82 to 2000, and then the one from 1942, which kind of came right after the Battle of Midway and ended in 1966 as the spending for Vietnam was ratcheting up and Johnson's Guns and Butter programs, where he's trying to do great society spending, and inflation started to get out of control. So it's a little bit, we only have two cases, a little bit early, but we're certainly in the window where we need to be thinking about it. And that's where what we've been talking about over the last several months of, hey, it's time to be thinking in terms of, will the next decline be a more severe one? And some of those signs, on the sentiment side of things, for example, percentage of household assets in stocks recently hit a record high.
Right.
And we look at valuations, depending on how you want to define it, price to earnings ratios, where you just take the last four quarter earnings of the S&P 500 versus the price. It's in the, where it was a few months ago, in the top 10% of all readings historically. Mm-hmm. They use something else people call the Shiller PE or the Cape PE. It's just like a 10-year average of earnings, and you adjust it for inflation and then look at price, and that is extremely high. And usually when you get those readings, the returns over the next 10 years tend to be lower. And so where we see it, there's a table set. It's just a question of the catalyst. Mm-hmm. So that's where I think the question is, and it really depends on how far the administration goes in remaking the economy. And I'm not here to tell you it's right or wrong thing, but when you have almost 40% of the S&P 500 in the top 10 stocks, which are the so-called Mag 7, the Nvidias, Microsoft, Apples of the world, for the most part, those companies are not the ones that are going to benefit initially from a reconfiguration of global supply chains and reshoring. And so it's going to be difficult for a cap-weighted index like the S&P 500 to make much headway. And so I think that's the open question, is whether or not this is something that is a minor tweak at the end of the day, or is this really something only happens every few decades where we're reconfiguring how the global economy works.
That's good insight, and I certainly understand historical perspective what you're talking about here. One more final question, if you don't mind, I'm going to throw in here. We've had these periods. You mentioned the secular bulls, how long they ran. One started, when the World War II was not quite over, ran till 66. One started in 1982 and ran until 2000, the top of the dot-com bubble. Now, we had a period of time where there was a secular bear. So that's the opposite, folks. That's the opposite of the bull. Secular bull is a long-term, again, it's kind of like the old saying that stocks go up on an escalator and then they eventually go down on an elevator. You had crashes in, we had one in 66, 1970, but the big one was in 1974, the, quote, Nifty 50 market, where the big institutions got fed up with technology from the 60s, and they piled into the same 50 stocks, saying those will permanently go up, and they went down 85, 90%. A lot of them are still around. Avon, Clorox, Disney. Anyway, the dot-com was different. That had companies that had business plans. There was no actual company. Some of these things were valued at tens of millions of dollars, and all they had was, I remember one that Jeremy Siegel talked about that actually was a business plan, and it was a shell company, and they said, there's nothing outstanding about this shell company. It has zero sales, and yet it was worth like $78 million or something like that. So it's a crazy mania, and maybe now, we'll see. So these are some periods of time where you get extreme bears when you get those kind of drops. Do you see any historical lessons that might apply to where we are today from any of those past let's call them again, secular bear markets.
Yeah, yeah, I think there's two things I'll point out. One, directly what you were talking about. I think the Nifty 50 era is probably more appropriate than mm-hmm. the .com, because the biggest stocks in the market right now, these are real companies.
Right.
They have fantastic cash flow. It's amazing. They can return billions of capital to shareholders through dividends and buybacks, and mm-hmm. also put billions of dollars into capital spending plans through AI.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's really no companies in history that could have done this. Now, it's possible that some of this AI spending turned out to be throwing good money after bad from a profitability standpoint,
right.
not necessarily from a technology standpoint. So I think the Nifty 50 era seems to be more appropriate. These are real companies that just everybody got into, primarily because ETFs made it so easy. Everybody
right.
just buys some cap-weighted ETF. So that, I think, it makes sense. The other thing that happened, this is why history doesn't repeat, but it does rhyme.
Right.
In the 60s, it was the inflation came first.
Mm. Good point.
And then you got the Nifty 50 a few years later. Well, we certainly had an inflation surge in 2022, but it's quite possible we got the Mag 7, and then this becomes a prolonged higher inflation era due to resource constraints as we reshore and also as we deal with global demographics, where we here in the U.S. we always joke about millennials and mm-hmm. how annoying they are and so forth. Well, a lot of countries would love to have millennials.
True.
They never had that mini baby boom, and so their workforces are aging out.
Mm-hmm.
They're retiring. There's no one left behind them,
mm-hmm.
and so this is going to have an impact on wages globally, and we could be in an era of higher inflation. So again, it doesn't repeat; it rhymes. But the mm-hmm. combination of everybody piling into the same few stocks, and then a new inflation regime, I think is the recipe for a secular bear market.
All right. Well, I agree with you completely, and I'm very surprised how much we agree. Not that I was expecting to disagree, but I'm like, everything, I apologize for saying it this way, but everything you're telling people is what I've been telling people for the most part. But you're more of a technician, a little more short-term. But these are great long-term insights that you've got. Any final words you want for our audience today, Ed?
The only thing I'd say is, just stay disciplined and focused. Markets go through phases. The important thing is to have a long-term plan,
mm-hmm.
All-weather plan, and stick with it through all the weather conditions.
All right. Excellent insight. We appreciate you, and we will certainly look forward to having you back in the future, assuming that time allows. So,
thanks for having me.
And I hope you enjoyed that interview with Ed Kressel, who's, again, he's down in Florida. He's a part of Ned Davis Research. I've known about Ned Davis Research for a long, long time, many of the money managers. And his book, Being Right or Making Money, is kind of a funny story how he ended up learning that. He was a stockbroker, investor back in the early 70s, if I remember correctly. And he would tend to see major macro trends changing, and he was typically right on the trend, but then he didn't make money on the trend, and so he went back and said, okay, what's going on here? I ended up being right, but usually he's kind of like me. He's usually early, and so he usually identifies bear markets before they start, but he didn't have a system, if you want to call it that, to capture those gains or avoid those losses. So the issue is, being right or making money has to deal with your emotions. It has to deal with technical analysis. These guys are chartered market technicians, which don't practice buy and hold. They practice what we call tactical investment strategies. And that book, by the way, again, Ned Davis, Being Right or Making Money. You can order it on Amazon, I believe. But that's one of the best investment books. When I eventually do a course on the all-stars of investing history, he's probably going to be in that group, which will be very narrow. Peter Lynch, John Templeton, my mentor, Dr. James McKeever. I think Ned is probably going to categorize in there. So the heavyweights of all time, Ned Davis, in my mind, fits in that category. I would go to Amazon or wherever, order the book, Being Right or Making Money, And also, if you want, it's institutionally priced because it's for institutions. But a lot of you are listening to me. You may have a family office. You may be, just very wealthy. You can do whatever you want. It's NDR.com, NedDavisResearch.com. Go there and get some of their latest material. Again, NDR.com.
All right, well, we hope you enjoyed that interview with Ed Clissold of Ned Davis Research and Jerry Tuma. Again, if you want to learn more about Ned Davis Research, you can find them at NDR.com. NDR, like NedDavisResearch.com. To learn more about us, you can go to CornerstoneReport.com. CornerstoneReport.com. Or you can reach out at 1-800-327-4285. That's 1-800-327-4285. If it's easier for you to catch us on podcasts, you can listen to us on Apple, Spotify, or Amazon Audible. Just search for Jerry Tuma's Smart Money. All right, we appreciate you, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Jerry Tuma's Smart Money is a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services of Dallas, Texas. Jerry Tuma is a certified financial planner. Financial advisors at Cornerstone could help you if you prefer to delegate your investment decisions to a financial professional. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. We publish a newsletter, Cornerstone Report, which is available on our website or by calling our toll-free number at 800-327-4285. That's also the number to call for more information about anything we've discussed during today's broadcast. For more information, visit our website at cornerstonereport.com. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Tuma's Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. Remember, we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.